You know, it was a gloomy day yesterday, but Central Park was bathed in pink. 25,000 people turned out for the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. What began in Dallas 27 years ago with less than 1,000 runners has now grown into a 120 race enterprise with 1.5 million participants. That's amazing. The race is named for a woman who fought and lost a valiant battle with breast cancer 30 years ago. Her sister promised she would devote her life to fighting the disease, and the Race for the Cure is the fruit of that promise. The foundation has raised a total of $1.5 billion for cancer research and prevention. That's no small change. She also has found some time somewhere in all of this to pen a memoir called Promise Me, How a Sister's Love Launched the Global Movement to End Breast Cancer. It is published by Crown Archetype. Please welcome Nancy G. Brinker to the program.
Thank you.
Ambassador Brinker.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
We'll get to that in just a moment. It's good to have you with us in the program. Let's talk about yesterday, first of all. I had a chance to see the walkers and runners and the enthusiasm in the park and the celebrities. How did it go?
It was a wonderful day. First of all, the rain held off until it was over. That's always a great day.
Always good.
But mostly we had, 25,000 people racing, walking for the cure. And what I'm beginning to notice, which is really, really good, is fewer pink signs on people's backs running in memory of someone. Even though they might say mother, but, friend, daughter, people are living longer with this disease. Thank heavens, finally.
It is still a terrible scourge, though.
Terrible.
And there is still too
terrible.
Much pink.
Yeah, leading killer of women ages 40 to 60. Every 69 seconds, a woman dies of breast cancer around the world.
That's awful. My mother, my mother-in-law, my sister. My sister is having a scan today because of a possible recurrence. I just, it's a very emotional thing for me. I just can't understand why we can't cure this.
Yeah. Well, it's a highly complex disease. And, when people ask that, I feel really badly because I've had breast cancer, too. And it can recur with anybody at any time. So we're all, in this together. It's not that we don't want it to happen faster. But if you look historically, which Promise Me, my book gives you a history, very little was done about breast cancer or actually new cancer therapy until about 40 or 50 years ago. And then when Susan G. Komen came on the scene, that began the sort of advocacy, awareness, and movement, and the investment in research specifically targeted to breast cancer and awareness.
Why was that? Why was it ignored,
partially,
if you will?
Partially it was a women's movement, but partially it was because people just didn't understand how many people were dying of this disease.
No one had actually tallied it all up?
No. Well, I did a little casual research as my sister was dying, and I found out that during the Vietnam War, which was the worst part, one of the worst things in my youth, 59,000 Americans had died, which was horrid. But in the same time period, 339,000 people had died of breast cancer. No one was outraged.
Wow.
No one.
Wow.
And I'm not a rocket scientist, but I just said, it's time. We got to change the culture and we before we can make a change in the clinic.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but let's back up a little bit, mm-hmm. because the book is a memoir of life as well,
right,
your time with
right,
your sister.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about your sister and in whose name you have done so much.
She was a beautiful, charming, generous, terrific person who only really lived to be 36. And yet in those years...
Way too young.
Yeah, way too young, but an extraordinary person. And I wanted the public and I wanted people within Susan G. Komen who do our work to really know her as a person, because it's been 30 years this year that she died.
Does it seem like yesterday?
It seems like yesterday. I don't know where all the years have gone. When they came to ask me to do the memoir, I said, well, I thought only really old people did memoirs. Then I realized I really am old. So, it was time to do it. And it was important for me for people to recognize the benchmarks that have been achieved, even though you hear such enormous criticism. And there are real problems in coming to a place where we can control this disease. The short-term goal is to turn breast cancer and all cancers that are aggressive into manageable chronic diseases. The long-term goal, of course, is to prevent it from ever happening.
Did you promise her to fight this? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we went through this journey together of her illness with my mother and my sister and me, spending hours, months, and days in clinics, endlessly searching for the next thing. And she came to treatment very late, but even if she'd gone to or gotten to a cancer center, it probably would have been too late. I suspect that she was BRCA positive, BRCA1 positive as I am. I suspect she had triple negative breast cancer, very aggressive. But nonetheless, I do think she would have had some extra years to live, even then, if she'd been able to enter a clinical trial. The mindsets were so different. And right before she died, she asked me, please, you know, we just can't let this keep happening to families and people. And I want you to promise me when I get better. That was always her code word, when I get better. She could never say when I die. She was too young and really couldn't face it. And she said, you know, I want to change this. I want you to promise me that you'll work with me to make sure that we end this disease.
Okay. Well, we all have been in that situation where we want to make those promises. Delivering is another matter. You've delivered in spades. How did that happen?
Well, I actually didn't know what I was going to do. I mean, I was very troubled about it because I had made a promise, and I think that I'm pretty dogged about most things that I do and take them all very seriously, even if they're not sometimes. But I had made this promise, and I was fortunate enough to be married to a man who allowed me to have a platform. You know, I didn't have to go back to work, to my job, what I was doing. And by the way,
that was in marketing, right?
Right.
So you had
right.
a natural
That's
affinity
right.
for this
I had kind a
of
natural
thing.
Affinity, and I had great mentors in marketing all my life. Stanley Marcus, who was the founder of Neiman Marcus, my father. You know, I'm from Peoria, and my father was a great small businessman, and my former husband was a founder of the casual dining segment of the restaurant industry.
So you know what plays in Peoria.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And we still have our family business there, as a matter of fact, and I go back a lot. But anyway, it just was dogged refusal to accept the fact that it was okay not to talk about this disease. And it was okay to let people – it wasn't okay. And I thought this would only take me maybe 10 or 12 years. You know, I was a young woman when I started doing this, and I really thought I was smarter, of course, and I knew nothing about what I was getting ready to get into.
You were going to conquer the world in 12 years and move on, huh?
Yeah. And then, you know, I promised Susie that if it took the rest of my life, I'd do it. I just didn't know it really would take the rest of my life. But it has been the most incredible journey, and I'm very proud of what we've done. But I never look back. I'm always looking forward, and we have a lot more to accomplish.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. Where are we in the research? Where are we on the prevention factors? Have we really made that much progress in 30 years?
You know, let me start off with a few facts. When we started this, the 5-year survival rate of very early breast cancer in late 70s was 74%. Today, it's 98%.
That's a good number.
In the U.S.
That's good.
Now, people would say, well, yeah, but it's screening and it's early cancer and all that early cancer should be curable. Well, it is, but it took a long time to change the culture to make that happen. Remember, we never said the words breast cancer out loud in 1978. It was just Betty Ford was the first person to talk about it. But, all right, let's move on.
And she was instrumental
she
early
was
on for
instrumental
you.
To me personally and to this and to the movement. I don't think she's ever really gotten credit for what she did. She was the first public figure to stand up and do that. But in any event, it was just really important to me that we got to the bottom of this. And when you saw the federal government was only giving $25 or $30 million to the whole breast cancer sort of complex, when you saw that people couldn't say these words out loud, all that, unless we had a lot of awareness and a lot of funding of research, created scientific careers, gave people measurable goals to meet, and also continue to take what we learned in science and translate it into real practice, real-time practice, and in a public health setting. My model, Miles, for doing all this was the polio movement, the whole polio effort. I saw that as a 5-year-old, how a nation mobilized all of its interests, science, healthcare, people, advocacy, and conquered a disease. Now, cancer is a lot more difficult than a viral disease, although some of cancer is. And anyway, I think we are getting there. Easy for me to say when I'm not, you know, suffering from end-stage disease right now or some, you know, because it's so frustrating for people and so sad. But when you look at it in terms of real time and where we're going with targeted therapies, for example, with HER2, with hormone-dependent cancers, we have increased survival rates 50% with those kinds of cancers. Where we're heading is to really develop these targeted therapies so that we can control, turn switches off and on, get our hands around triple negative disease and inflammatory breast cancer, the kinds that really kill people aggressively quickly and recur. That's where we're headed.
What about mammograms? I know you've had some very strong statements about this. Give us the definitive word from your
viewpoint. Very, very effective in a public health setting. 80%, maybe to 84% effective. Perfect? Absolutely not. What happens with women with dense breast tissue? Well, we're looking at Susan G. Komen, and we'll have a lot more to say about it, pairing maybe ultrasound with mammography. We know we have technologies that work. We're very...
Is it just a matter of money?
It's political will. It's not money. You know, when we have detection devices in the airport that can see through people and you walk through, it's not money.
Why not do the mammogram when you get on the flight?
Well, exactly. We know how to do this stuff. Yeah. We're just not doing it. And what I'm particularly outraged about is after the announcement of the Healthcare Prevention Task Force last year, not a thing has happened except for us at Susan G. Komen in outrage saying it's time to close this technology gap. And in that regard, we're having conferences. We're having one of our first conferences about it in Israel at Weizmann Institute in October to kind of begin to raise this within the scientific community. You know, if you don't have the funding, why? And why aren't we all galvanized around this?
Yeah, it's amazing how many times when you look at problems like this, if just a little more money, little more attention, a little more technology was brought to bear, lives would be saved.
That's exactly
right. That's the tragedy, isn't it?
That is the tragedy. And all the naysayers say, oh, it isn't worth doing. Well, you know, it may not be the ultimate prevention, of course not, but what about the people diagnosed today? What about, and I think, by the way, when people say that, that is an elitist answer. What about people who have no care? Sometimes, you know, giving a woman a chance to have a mammogram or a breast screening service is the first time she will have seen a physician except during childbirth. And, you know, this is how it is in rural America. This is how it is in a lot of across this country.
Yeah,
but
we're not talking about a third world nation here.
No,
we're talking about the United States.
No, we're talking about
America,
the United States. And yet the people who are the most vocal about it, which frustrates me so much, live in big cities with very available health care and the finest and the best. And so that I think it's a rather elitist attitude to take that opinion, well, screening doesn't work. Well, no, what are you doing about it? And B, go take a trip with me and you'll see what it does. Yeah. We provided, Miles, 500,000 mammograms last year across America and diagnostic care.
And is it
and
true?
Procedures, biopsies.
So $1.5 billion, if those who walk or run and who contribute to your foundation, is that where the money goes for new technology, or give us an idea of where all that money is being spent?
Susan G. Komen, as an organization, has the broadest mission of any breast cancer organization. So that basically through our structure, where 75% of the funds raised, for example, through Raise for the Cure, will stay right here in New York. Over $50 million has been granted back to New York. This year alone, the race funds will have taken care of 250,000 New Yorkers. So that's on the community level. 25% of what's raised in most of our events comes to our national grant pool. And we are now the largest private funder of breast cancer research in the world, other than the U.S. government. So what we do,
congratulations.
Thank you. And what we do is you could look at our research fund a little bit like a fund. We take some big bets on people that we think are outstanding. We also take safe bets on people we know that are doing very decent translational research. And then we take some big bets on prevention and things that are far out. You know, the real issue is for years we funded the study of cancer biology. We wanted to know how what cancer looked like, define it. And now we know. And now we're taking that research and we're applying it in real translational ways into real-time treatment and care.
All right. I introduced you as ambassador. Tell us how you got to be an ambassador before we let you get away.
That's gotten to be kind of a nickname now. Well, I was appointed ambassador to Hungary by President Bush in 2001 and served there, and it changed my life. What an enormously exciting thing to represent the United States in a country like Hungary, which I grew to love, and in a place like Central Europe in very fascinating times. I was to leave on 9/11, by the way. I left a few days after, so it was fascinating.
Wow.
Then I was
what a time to be abroad.
What a time to be abroad. Then, 4 or 5 years later, President Mrs. Bush asked me to be chief of protocol at the White House, which is also an ambassador title. And now I'm ambassador to the UN for cancer control.
All right. Well, Madam Ambassador times three. May I kiss the ring? Anyway, congratulations on all
Thank
your success.
You,
it's unfortunate where it all came from. That you had such a terrible loss, but it's a great story of keeping a memory alive and doing some good.
Thank you. Thank you for featuring Promise Me. I appreciate it.
All right. Ambassador Nancy Brinker will be speaking and signing books at Krupa Union tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. That's on 7th Street between 3rd and 4th Avenues. For more information, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. Ambassador, thanks again.
Thank you.